Today, I want to explore with you paradoxes that show up in business leadership and personal growth and how we can use them to guide our decisions and our actions. I'm going to start with one of my favorite paradoxes, the hard things paradox. And, you know, I call it cutting your right hand, if you're right-handed, cutting your right hand fingernails first. Avoiding difficult conversations, decisions, responsibilities may feel easier in the moment, but it often creates bigger problems later. When we face challenges early, we strengthen our relationship to business and personal growth. What have you found about this hard things paradox that can help our Napoleon Hill community members to understand how we lean into the difficult?
The idea of paradox, and I love this topic. You know, the law of polarity comes into play here if we begin to think about it in those, you know, in those terms. There's two ends to a stick. So both things exist, both are true. And if I eliminate one or try to eliminate one, what I'm actually doing is eliminating access to what is possible. So when I can begin to embrace paradox, that there is a truth here and there's a truth here, I begin to have a wider spectrum that I can actually work with. And it allows me to be more resourceful. I can, you know, an idea here, you know, that you can think of is, yeah, some of the clients I work with, they want to be more, as a leader, they want to be more empathetic, yeah, in their organization. I just want to demonstrate more empathy for where people are at. Well, you don't get empathy. You don't have empathy. You have opportunities to be empathetic. And that's the paradox, because you'll have something show up that is kind of like, well, that really pisses me off. Okay. Now that's actually, it kind of kicks that up, but it's also an opportunity to be empathetic. So the same would be true with courage, you know, an opportunity to be courageous. I'm not courageous. I have opportunities to be courageous. So it's part of this continuum. And I have to begin to look at it from the standpoint of life isn't happening to me, it's happening for me.
Well, I think it's in a paradox of life is happening through me and the meaning that provides the differentiator. So both sides of this are true, and therefore it's the meaning that we give it and allowing life to come through us. You know, to us is beneficial. For us, I mean, sorry, to us is a punishment, but for us is beneficial, but through us, I think acknowledges the paradox and acknowledges an awareness that all exists and that we are interfering with that in which we want to coincide in our own journey, in our own divine direction and devotion. And specifically, when you're looking at the idea of this paradox in life coming for us or through us, you know, we avoid hard things. And it is, you know, the hard things, the struggles, the mistakes, the setbacks, where the solution already lies. It's just a lapse of time. And the meaning we give the lapse of time and the intention we give within the context of that time that allows the resolution, the resolution to appear. When you choose hard actions today, what is created in the future?
Growth. More than anything else. And this, you know, kind of moves us into the growth paradox, which is a lesson, yeah, the other paradox here. But, you know, the organism, and this is true of every living organism, it seeks stasis, it seeks comfort, it seeks stability. That's the paradox. So that is true. That's what the organism seeks. The only way that we actually excel in life, the only way we actually achieve in life is to be uncomfortable. We have to move outside of our comfort zone. So that is also a truth. So both of these things exist, and it's a question of which one do I feed? Which one do I feed?
Yeah, and when we talk about that, and there's so many different parables and stories, yeah, about this paradox about feeding, one of the paradoxes is just because someone bleeds you doesn't mean they don't feed you. And I use as two specific examples, raising children. You know, if anyone tells you their kids don't bleed, they're lying, but that bleeding is a form of feeding. And then on the other side of life was the transition of my mom, who in her later years, not nearly as much as I bled her, but she bled me at the later layers of her life. And that bleeding was one of the greatest feedings for me as well. In the construct of growth and the hard things and this paradox of feeding and bleeding, how do we decipher whether bleeding is actually interfering with our success or it's actually providing us growth?
I love that question. It kind of comes down to, for me anyway, and I'll just speak from my own experience, you know, I work with this notion of for the sake of what?
Yes, you taught me, and I've propelled and promoted that because it's such a great distinction. Thank you.
Yeah, and it's all about personal meaning. What matters to me? What matters? So when I'm confronted with this conundrum, the fallback is going to be what matters to me, because this will be true and this will be true. Only one of them will actually feed what matters to me, and yeah, that is a really important distinction to work with.
Yeah, no, it really is. And meaning is so important within the context of everything, but especially paradoxes. And as you stated, instead of I'll be happy when, which is a meaning that we can give to hard situations, struggles, setbacks, failures, mistakes, et cetera, or defining moments, or even historical relevances, when we start looking at for the sake of what, aligned with the Napoleon Hill philosophy and institute, we then instill or empower people with a definiteness of purpose. See, there's no purpose in I'll be happy when. Purpose is in for the sake of what.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And it's interesting because it's always shifting. Yeah, what was important to me in my 20s is not as important. It doesn't mean that it's not important, but it's not certainly as important as what's available to me and what's important to me now in this later stage of my life. Both of them exist.
Right. Both of them exist. And that's hard for people to comprehend.
Yeah. So which one matters now? And then in that question of, what matters now keeps me present. It keeps me out of the past, keeps me out of the future, keeps me present.
It actually is one of the catalytic things that set me on a path to understand that some things become non-negotiable. So you're just steadfast regardless of the circumstances, and some things become negotiable for the sake of. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to have those distinguished behaviors between no matter what happens tomorrow, I'm going to spend a minimum of time on my sleep, my health, my family, my faith, my finance, the study of time and the study of relativity. But negotiably, I'll use the Eisenhower matrix, for example. According to the circumstances of today, here's how I'm going to prioritize my non-negotiable behaviors within the context of knowing for the sake of what am I present? For the sake of what am I doing, saying, thinking, feeling, and believing in the 24 hours of activities that I get every day, except for the last day of my life when I'm cheated. Now, if anybody would like the bleeding and feeding exercise, I'd love to send that to you. Email me, David@dmeltzer.com, along with the training today, my book, David@dmeltzer.com. You can get the feeding and bleeding template and exercise. Now, one of my favorite paradoxes that you've coached more people, including me, you coach, but you've coached more people than most people on earth. And this is a paradox that is so hard as a coach, teacher, and a mentor. It's, the slow then suddenly paradox. Things happen very slowly and then all of a sudden. And so people that we work with get attached to an outcome and get impatient and they quit. How does this paradox impact people? Because I think it's the most difficult in entrepreneurship.
The part of the difficulty is, we live in a very interesting reality structure, space-time. Embedded in space-time, and this is really, it's an embedded component, is scarcity. There's not enough time. There's not enough distance. There's not enough. So embedded in the context of space-time is this notion of scarcity. So when I'm looking at this slow, suddenly paradox, most people will gravitate towards, I've done everything I said I was supposed to do. Where is it? Okay. And scarcity comes into play. It's I haven't devoted enough time to it. I haven't devoted enough resources to it. One of the ways that I work with that with the clients with whom I work is it's already happened. I just haven't arrived yet.
Yeah.
Just that little meme. It's already happened. I just haven't arrived. Everything is
already happened. What am I doing to interfere with it? So
that's part of it. Yeah.
Right.
And sometimes the interference is thinking that I can actually do something.
Yeah. Good point.
Yeah. So in the study of Sufism, there's a notion of effortless efforting. I'm going to do stuff. I'm going to do stuff in my life. But Napoleon Hill, and both Napoleon Hill and Neville Goddard talk about the fallacy, the illusion, the delusion that I can do anything to make a difference. I do stuff, but the universe is working at its own pace, in its own speed. 38 billion years it's been delivering results. Yeah. Who am I to think that it won't deliver results?
Yeah, and part of that is faith, because in the paradox of the slow then suddenly paradox is the fact that today, in the present, my behaviors may be aligned with where I want to be or better, but the evidence is not. The evidence is usually non-existent, or even worse, the evidence that we see today is contrary to where we want to be or better, even if our behaviors today, and maybe even for the last few weeks, months, or years, have been aligned with our divine direction, the evidence today is non-existent or contrary. Therefore, it takes faith to understand the slow then suddenly paradox, that who am I to interfere with what's already done?
Exactly. And the part of that paradox is I look at, my physical reality and I see something. Well, this is the truth. It does exist. But faith is in the unknown. It's already happened. I just haven't arrived. I have to, that faith is the paradox. It is real. It's a truth. So both truths exist simultaneously. Which one do I feed?
Yeah, and Napoleon Hill and many others, Bob Proctor, we all talk about the rule of 72 as applicable to money, but it actually applies to behaviors that, it takes about 90% of the time and effort to get to 25% of the way there when things are doubling. So you go from 25% of the way there to 50 to 100 in the last 10% of the effort, time, et cetera. That also falls within the slow, things happen very slowly, then all of a sudden paradox. If you'd like that exercise about exponential growth acceleration, aggregation, and how to utilize non-negotiable and negotiable behavior, email me, David, that means beloved, at the first initial, Meltzer means servant, david@themeltzer.com. Get your exercises and guides for that paradox with the non-negotiable and negotiable behaviors. Now, the next paradox, Blaine, that I want to talk about.
I love this is, one.
Yeah, me too. The intelligence paradox. As we grow in knowledge and experience, we often realize how much more there is to learn. I call it the farther you go, the less you know paradox.
Yep.
I used to use this when my mom told me to study. I would tell her, Mom, the more I study, the more I know. The more I know, the more I forget. The more I forget, the less I know. So why study? But more importantly, it didn't work. But there's a difference between awareness and learning. And I think that's where the paradox lies. I know you have shed some great light onto me about awareness and how learning elevates our awareness, and our awareness is different than understanding how much we know.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Learning is integrated awareness. And that's one way to think about it. Until it's been integrated into my experience, into my body, into my whole self, it remains just information. And information by itself actually is pretty useless. So does it exist? Yes, it exists. But it's the integration of it. And this is where intelligence comes into play.
Yeah,
the integration.
Yeah, inspiration, intelligence, intuition. Information is taking thought into form, but it needs that integration in order for it to have an elevated awareness or a materialization, monetization component to it. How about questions and suggestions within the intelligence paradox? How important is it that we're more interested than interesting, that, we don't have a need to be right, offended, separate or inferior or superior in this intelligence paradox? Because so many people use comparative analysis. They use their ego to feel more intelligent than other people, when that has nothing to do with how much you know or how or what level of awareness or frequency you're living.
The paradox there is we, you know, oftentimes we'll ask questions to confirm a bias that we have. And I want to be able to use questions to illuminate something I don't know. And questions serve two purposes, as far as I can tell. One is obvious, you know, it's the gathering of information. The second is it points direction. So if I'm looking as a leader to cause movement in my organization towards a specific outcome, the nature of the question I ask is really important. I want to ask questions that will cause people to search in the direction I want them to go. The answer is there. You know, the whole idea of, you know, show me a sign. Well, signs are latent. Signs show up after things have moved. They never point direction to something. They indicate that you're on the path to something. So that's kind of how that comes into play.
Yeah, I think understanding open minds and how they're relative to the open questions that we ask about what they like, don't like, know, don't know, work and doesn't work, and provide value, because that sets as a platform or a premise of, would it help you if I gave you more of what you like or more of what you know or more of what's working, or take away what you don't like or don't know or what's not working, which leads into a real paradox that so many people fall into. I think people don't understand the difference between discipline and devotion. So many people, like I was when I was young, I was so busy working, I'd forget to make money. I was so disciplined in working, I'd forget to make money. I was so disciplined in working, I forget to take care of my health. I was so disciplined in working, I forgot to take care and to spend time with my family, when the only time or thought about working was, I'm going to do this so I make more money, have more time with my family, and be healthier, and completely stuck in the effort paradox that, you know, trying to force, as you mentioned earlier, outcomes can actually reduce or resist performance.
Yeah. And you know, Napoleon Hill talks about in his book, Outwitting the Devil, drift. One of the ways that drift begins to appear is when we get so fixated on an outcome, as an example, that we begin to lose connection to the environment is moving us away from what we want. Our behavior is moving us away from what we say we want. And we start correcting for that behavioral move, and the destination starts to, because we're shifting for behavior, we're compensating for drift in behavior, we don't really compensate for the need to reorient back to what matters. So that's where that comes into play.
Yeah, no, it is, you know, and by the way, if anybody wants the open-minded, open question guide, once again, email me, david@dmeltzer.com. I always need my commercial breaks to get everybody the exercises, guides, and books. david@dmeltzer.com if you want that. We actually can create resistance by our effort. You know,
absolutely.
Wayne Dyer, one of our other mentors and friends, you know, would always say, I think you got it from Xander, is what you resist, persist. In the context of resistance being a force and an effort, right? It takes effort to resist. It is a force. And as Hawkins, as I mentioned earlier, always said, right, force creates a counterforce. How can we get people to understand within the context of the effort paradox, what you resist persists, and you have to still be active to surrender, but not control in the surrender.
And surrender is the key word there. I really think that is the key word. Michael Singer talks about this in his Surrender Experiment.
Yeah.
Great book, that and The Untethered Soul. The universe is continuously conspiring, and it is a beneficent universe. I firmly believe that. The problem exists when I get in the way of it. And you mentioned this earlier. We will get in the way of what seems to be happening because we want to push it harder. We want to make it happen faster. We want to be able to settle back. And this is when we talk about flow states. When you get into a flow state, essentially what you're doing is you're dropping yourself into being present in the moment, not wishing it was something different, not trying to change what it is. Flow states exist as an experience when you're in the moment. And that's what surrender is. It is what it is. Let's harvest the good in the moment, and we'll forgive the rest and just keep moving.
So good. And to understand that paradox of effort And what you resist persists. If anybody wants to know how to lessen the distance of resistance, I have a guide as well to reduce the distance of resistance. Email me, david@dmeltzer.com for that guide. All exercises, guides, and book and training are available today. david@dmeltzer.com. The last paradox before I let you get on to the Q&A session is one in which your wife, the incredible Cynthia Kersey, who wrote the Unstoppable Women book, is the giving paradox. You know, yes. Scarcity thinking tells us that giving reduces what we have. No, not receiving reduces what we have. And in the infinite loop of giving, where we give more, we're given more, and we ask and receive more, knowing that when we receive, we actually are giving a gift. When we receive, and this was the lesson that Cynthia Kersey taught me, when we receive, we're giving a gift because we feel closest to God. We are at our higher self when we're able and capable of helping other people. And by us allowing other people to be able and capable of helping, we are giving them the gift of being closest to God. We're giving the gift of higher self. And this is the giving paradox. And it is abundance that says the more we give, the more we're given. The more we're given, the more we receive. The more we receive, then we can ask for more than more, so we can give more than more, be given more than more, receive more than more, and ask for more than more than more. Now we're in this infinite loop of a giving paradox. Why do people have such a hard time receiving instead of having a hard time giving?
The net answer to that is worthiness. Most people do not believe they're worthy to receive. They don't believe that they're worthy of asking for assistance, asking for what they need in order to have the kind of life that they'd like. And that is, I mean, that just flies in the face of what is true in the universe. The universe is abundant. It doesn't concern itself with worthiness. Nature, when you look at nature, there is nothing in nature that serves exclusively as a center of accumulation. Everything serves as a center of distribution in some way. Everything is always giving, and as a consequence, there's got to be something in nature that's always receiving. There's nothing in nature that questions its worthiness. It just is, I mean, it just bees.
Crazy.
It just bees.
It does.
And there's a reciprocity that, you know, dials in a thriving environment, that reciprocity flourishes. There's giving, receiving, giving, receiving, giving, receiving, and it's a jungle out there. Hallelujah.
So good. The paradox of giving. If you want the exercise on the infinite loop of giving and the giving paradox, email me, david@dmeltzer.com. The infinite loop of giving will not allow you to live in scarcity. There's a zero-sum game. People don't realize that money, for example, is a man-made construct. The more love you give, the more you receive. The more generosity and kindness you give, the more you receive. But money is like a chair. The more chairs you give, the more you won't receive, unless you give the chairs, then you use gratitude and forgiveness to see all that you're given from giving the chair, then receive it because you're worthy, and then ask for more chairs or more than more chairs. That's how the infinite loop will work. Get that guide exercise, david@dmeltzer.com. Blaine, when we look at these lessons today that we shared, there's a clear pattern that emerges.
Yep.
Success is rarely about forcing an outcome. It's about understanding the deeper principles that guide growth for the sake of what you desire in your divine direction. We all face hard things early in life, so it becomes easier later. We accept discomfort because it signals growth. We stay patient because progress compounds. When we align ourselves with these paradoxes, today, all available to you, we stop chasing success and we begin to clear the way to attract it. And these contradictions, these paradoxes we once struggled with, become the very forces that move us forward. Everybody, if you want the guide or exercise from today, please email me, david@dmeltzer.com. Come and join me in Orange County, Vegas, Phoenix, SoFi Stadium, New York, New Jersey. That's just in the next couple of weeks. We are there on the car wash, meetings, holding court, masterminds, fireside chats, movie, TV, documentaries. We are working on it all. Just stay informed and stay invited. david@dmeltzer.com. Join our text community, 949-298-2905. Most importantly, stay on board, because my mentor, the incredible Blaine Bartlett. He is my mentor, teacher, and coach, the incredible double B, BlaineBartlett.com. He'll move your possibilities into a reality. Blaine, thank you so much for carrying the torch. Thank you for carrying on. I will see you soon. God bless everybody.